Welcome back. This is the Friday Market Monitor with Walter Traversy, and I am Pina Bernardi. And as promised, we're hooking up with Chris Kaufman. Chris is the president of Parallax Financial Research. Good afternoon, Chris.
How are you?
Hi, good. How are you, sir?
Doing well.
Very good.
Chris, I was unfortunately unable to open the profile that was sent to me by your office, so forgive the abbreviated introduction, but I would note for our listeners that you have degrees in math and physics and an extensive background in geophysics, chaos theory, neural nets, technical analysis, and computerized trading systems. And in fact, Parallax delivers neural network-based stock and commodity forecasting models to professional money managers.
If our listeners want to take a look at the website, they can just visit www.pfr.com.
But it was the reference to chaos theory when that caught my attention, because a couple of years ago I stumbled across a book called The Predictors.
Oh, right.
Have you read that book, Chris?
Oh, sure, about the prediction company.
Yeah, the prediction company. And
we like to think of ourselves as sort of a mini prediction company. Well, we're dabbling in the same things as Doyne Farmer and the fellows at the Santa Fe Institute.
Yeah, that book was all about chaos theory. Unfortunately, it kind of ended in the middle, because I don't know how far they took it after that book was written. But fill in the blanks for our listeners, Chris. What is chaos theory?
Well, to put it simply, it's we study feedback. In the markets, the best way to think of feedback is the market goes up and people get excited that maybe are not invested yet, and then they want to get in and they want to buy because it's going up, and then that forces the market to go up further. So feedback in general, there are two types, negative and positive feedback. Positive feedback is when you have sort of an avalanche effect. In the markets, you would see buying because it's going up, or selling because it's going down, without regard to value. And in your, commonly you'd see positive feedback in, if you take your microphone and put it next to a speaker, that's the most common one, everyone knows. In the markets, it's sort of a runaway effect. You can get panics and manias that are associated with feedback effects. Basically, the outputs, which is what the market did today, are fed back through the investors' actions into what the market will do tomorrow. And on the other side of that, there's negative feedback, which we all experience every day, too, with, you know, your thermostat in your house. When it gets a little too hot, the thermostat shuts the heater off and the house cools until it gets below a certain level and it comes back on. In the markets, we see this as value investing. There's some sense of the value of a stock, and when price gets below that collective sense of value, a value investor would say it's a logical time to buy and would bid it up, and then that same investor would also, you know, get out when it was over its fair value. That's more of a traditional view of investing, but it's made much more difficult by a class of investors, or even money managers will, even value investors will do this. They'll buy and continue to buy just because something's going up, even if it's overvalued. And they'll sell even if it's undervalued because it's been going down. So you have these two competing forces. And what we try to do is make tools that measure these competing forces and give the managers, our clients, some feedback, some feedback from us. As to what the state of the market is at the current time and where they might, you know, have advantages and where they might run into trouble.
So in a sense, you're giving a solution platform for money managers so they can have an added value to discovering. Yeah, okay.
We're trying to discover what an unemotional value of the stock of a stock is, and then we're also trying to measure when optimism and pessimism cycles take control of price and push it beyond where it should be.
So there's more involved to the pricing in the market than simply some earnings-based calculation. There are a whole bunch of factors that you model in.
Yeah, but you need to know that too. I think reading Graham and Dodd, they have a great quote in there about the cycles of optimism and pessimism taking that you have to understand that there is a fair value and intrinsic value to a corporation, but you know, optimistic outlook or collective group behavior can drive that the price that people are willing to pay for it way out away from value, both ways. Generally, they'll drive it down harder than they'll drive it up. Fear is a much more compelling force than greed.
According to Alan Greenspan, apparently.
I
quite agree
with
him.
No, well, even at the top in 99, I think we were overvalued only about 10% or so on our models. But when we got to the bottom in 02, we were about 16% under. So, I mean, it does, you can see it. The drive can be pretty dramatic away from fair value.
It sure can. Now, on your homepage at PFR.com,
mm-hmm.
it makes reference to your neural network-based stock and commodity forecasting model. So
mm-hmm.
Neural networks means what?
Well, a neural network is a mathematical tool. It's very convenient for mathematicians to use. The reason it's convenient, it learns by example.
Okay.
Okay, so let's say you have some observed behavior in the market, or let's say some fundamental behavior. Let's say you know, for instance, that price is correlated to earnings. You know, we know that. And it's maybe correlated to a few other things as well. Dividends, cash flow, whatnot, debt levels. But that's a complicated model to put together. But what we've done is we've used neural nets. We fed neural nets examples of, you know, this is what the stock was priced at, and these are the fundamental factors that were in existence at that time. Learn from these, you know, thousands and thousands of examples how the market translates those fundamentals into a price. And we've done that. Used neural nets to do that problem. That's a very complicated problem.
So in other words, it would be kind of like a computer recognizing that a bushel of apples sometimes has 20 apples or sometimes 25 by just factoring in many different samples.
That's right.
And calculating
or
an average price.
You see it in character recognition. If mm-hmm. you draw an A and you want your computer to recognize it as a drawn A, different people draw it different ways. A neural net would be used to recognize that as a character. We've all seen it on our, you know, a Palm or a BlackBerry or something. You know what I mean, where you type in or you draw in some text and then it tries to recognize it as an A or a B or a C. It's the same sort of thing. It's a pattern recognition tool.
Mm-hmm. Would you say this is like a, let's say, an indicator to technical analysis, like bettering technical analysis,
it's only as good as the inputs you give it.
Okay.
If for instance, you feed it indicators that are not predictive at all, then it won't be able to learn anything about the outcomes.
But we're in conversation with Chris Kaufman, and Chris is the president of Parallax. And that company, by the way, was recognized by the Market Technicians Association for Distinguished Achievement in Computer-Assisted Analysis. So, Chris, now you've told us about chaos theory and you've explained what your version of a neural network is. Tie this up for us and let us know what you're seeing in markets these days.
Well, let's walk through this year, because this was a very interesting turn of events this year. The first signal that we had a problem came at the end of January. The S&P 500 on a monthly scale, if you look at a monthly chart, we saw a signal that, if you want to call it an upward avalanche, a time of a long-term uptrend that had reached its extreme point, where it would now change from an uptrend to a sideways, volatile sideways to down period. And so I alerted our clients to that at the end of January that we were in for rough sledding. Normally, this particular predictor is good for about 15 to 20 time periods. So if you're on a monthly scale, that's 15 to 20 months. If you're on, it works on all scales, so if it's a daily, it would be 15 days, and hourly, 15 hours, et cetera.
Okay.
But if you see a signal on a monthly scale, it's rare to get these signals. There, the last one on the S&P was in 1999, and you know we all know what happened after that. That actually went on longer than 15 to 20 months. But so I don't like seeing them because it means there's a lot of disruption that's about to happen. So at the same time we got this indicator, we also track valuations. Now, I mentioned that we've got a neural net model that actually prices individual stocks. We can take that model and price all the stocks in the market and then come up with an idea for how over or undervalued the entire market is. And we do that. We've done that for a number of years. And at the end of December, we were 6% overvalued. These are about 3,000 stocks that we end up having enough data for on the U.S. stocks to actually get a value.
That's an interesting number, and I want to explore that with you in a little more depth. We have to take a quick commercial break, Chris, if you don't mind hanging in there.
No.
Listeners, it is 1:46 on 580 CFRA. We'll take a quick break and be right back with Chris Kaufman, president of Parallax Research.
The 2007 Toyota Camry has won so many awards, Tony Graham calls it the trophy car. It's just one of the award-winning 2007 Toyotas now available at incredible year-end lease and purchase savings during Tony Graham's final 07 clearance countdown. This is the time to move up to the legendary quality and reliability of Toyota from Tony Graham. With exceptional Toyota countdown rates as low as 1.9%, year-end clearance pricing, and security deposits waived on all 07 model leases. Save thousands at the home of Ottawa's combined giant Toyota inventory. Tony Graham's Kanata Toyota in the Palladium Auto Park and Tony Graham Lexus Toyota Hunt Club in Merivale.
Tony Graham Lexus Toyota.
I'm Joel Matlin, president of Alarm Force. People often ask me why they should choose an Alarm Force home security system. Well, the answer is the value. By choosing live two-way voice protection with AlarmForce instead of one of our competitors, you save up to $20 a month on monitoring. Over the course of a standard contract, you save almost $600 with AlarmForce. Other companies charge more for live two-way voice protection because to them it's an upgraded premium service. But at AlarmForce, it's included free with every system. There's no cost for installation and activation, zero money up front, full warranty included, and only $25 per month. Call 1-800-267-2001 today. And remember, without Alarm Force's two-way voice security, you're wasting your money.
Call 1-800-267-2001. Alarm Force.
Alarm Force is listed on the TSX.
With each new season, Sunday House Call focuses on the latest medical evidence that changes the way we approach disease prevention and treatment. Hi, I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. Join me each Sunday as our guest researchers and newsmakers discuss their newest findings and how it may affect your health. That's Sunday House Call, online at sundayhousecall.com, Sundays 3 to 5 on 580 CFRA.
Brought to you in part by the Canadian Dental Association, reminding you a healthy mouth is part of a healthy body.
Treat yourself to spectacular bed and bath buys during these final days of Beddington's blockbuster birthday bash. Lynn?
Let's start with cozy jumbo fiber duvets, just $49.99 any size. Easy Care 180 thread count per kale sheet sets, only $19.99 any size. Our thirsty Terry bath towels are $4.99, and Beddington's oversized jumbo pillows, $4.99.
Hurry in for the blockbuster birthday bash at Beddington's or shop online at beddingtons.com.
CFRA.
You're tuned into the Friday Market Monitor with Walter Traversy and Pina Bernardi, and we are in conversation with Chris Kaufman. Chris is the president of Parallax Financial Research. You can visit their website at pfr.com. And it's so interesting to see their approach to investing and investment advice for the professional money management community. They base their modeling on chaos and complexity theory, among other things. Sounds a little bit like my house, Chris. maybe help me make sense
too.
Of that.
Mine too.
Just before our commercial break, Chris, you said that in December, your view was based on your models that markets were about 6% overvalued.
That's right.
And you know, valuation, I guess, I don't know, one man's trash is another man's treasure. How did you guys figure out what the value should be to determine it was 6% overvalued?
Well, it actually goes back 17 years to a project I did for Bankers Trust years ago. What we were trying to do is actually price a stock that had not been priced by the market yet for IPOs.
Okay.
And all we had were the fundamentals of the company. We didn't have any, you know, market specific, any price movement or any kind of feedback about, you know, what the stock was actually worth. So I trained a set of neural nets, one for each economic sector in the market. I trained these sets of neural nets to take the fundamentals, and we use a number of factors, you know, standard stuff, dividends, cash flow, sales, earnings, you know, everything that you would typically use to value a company, book value, et cetera,
sure.
And the prevailing interest rates at the time. And we trained the nets to be able to figure out how to get from the set of fundamentals to the price that was actually recognized by the market. And if you use enough data, you basically get rid of the cycles of optimism and pessimism, and you get a fair value. You get a sort of an unemotional value for a particular stock. I can bring up, we did this, Pina and I did this the other day for
don't say it.
One of her stocks. But
don't tell me. Was it Research in Motion?
Give you an example of Google.
There you go,
Chris. Looking at this
the
other day, and I thought, well, it would be interesting to see what our valuation is, and it came out exactly at 515, which is interesting.
Wow.
I didn't know that it was worth that much. It hadn't been for a while. But
so you can apply this
today
to individual stocks.
Yeah.
And so very interesting. So in December, you guys felt 6% overvalued, but the market kept getting a little more expensive from there.
That's right. Well, what happened is by the end of that down move in February, sort of cleared the air a little bit. It's like a thunderstorm on a hot, muggy day.
Okay.
And we got down to about 4% over. This was at the end of, no, actually it kept going. I'm showing 5% was the end of February. It cleared the air a little bit, but then we climbed back to 7.6% overvalued by the end of May, and the S&P threw another signal. And then the world markets were all throwing monthly extension signals at the same time. So I began to get very concerned going into May. Well, it was at the end of May that we were in for, you know, a much bigger move. And so then, you know, we start watching more closely. Monthly scale is good for long-term events, but you have to then go to the daily and weekly scales and start watching for signs of trouble. And,
sure.
And we can also break, you know, we can get the valuations by sector as well. And for the last year and a half, well, for the last year, tech has had the best valuations. I guess people, you know, because they got burned in 2000 to 2002 in tech, they just want to stay away from it. So people have been sort of staying away from the evil tech, and it was a great value. So we've been shifting. Most of our managers are sort of overweight. We're kind of overweight tech and underweight financials going into the high, and and then they've been rewarded a bit for it. But we're on a buying, you know, we're in a sort of buying mode now.
Are you?
I think most of the worst of the volatility is over, and we've sort of seen the range for the year.
And so you made an interesting comment. I would just like to understand a little more, or at least get your sense of. You said at the peak in whenever it was, 2000, 2001, the market, by your modeling, was really only 10% overvalued?
Did I understand you to say that? I don't have that picture with me, but it was something like that. It was 9, 10%
over.
9
or 10, so.
The problem was that, you know, valuation is a moving target. And you know, Graham and Dodd's contention was, yes, it's moving, but it moves slowly relative to the rest of the market. But back then, the valuation started tanking.
I see what you mean. Sure.
In 2001.
Yeah.
So you were chasing. You were starting out overvalued, but then chasing value downwards.
Right.
And of course, then the fear builds. You have this selling because it's going down, mentality that catches hold,
right.
And you drive the prices, you know, far below fair value until you finally reach a point where we were under by 16%. So you had this, avalanche, the best way to put it.
But my question was going to be, is that 10% number typical of where you would start seeing a sell-off?
Oh, yeah, let me talk about that. Generally, statistically, what shows the level that where you start seeing action is about 5%. 4 to 5%,
I see.
You
okay.
start seeing problems. And that's if you're overvalued. If you're undervalued, it's a little bit more, but it's still around the 5% area is where you see separation, where you see a correlation with
Chris,
future behavior.
Unfortunately, we have to wrap it up, but so you're seeing some pretty good values out there now, and you're in buying mode at the moment.
There are pretty good values out there now. I don't expect the market to get a big head of steam before middle of next year, so I do expect a trading range market for the rest of the year.
Oh, we'll look forward to future updates. Chris, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Oh, glad to talk to you.
Our guest was Chris Kaufman. He is the president of Parallax Financial Research. Their website is PFR.com. And go there and learn all about chaos theory and all the things that make investing an interesting process. Wasn't that